It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, I'm going to spend the hour talking to our all-star panel about what's going on in Afghanistan. I'm going to look at what's happening here at home with the Delta variant spiking and this idiocy over getting a vaccine, and maybe a little bit about voting rights and our infrastructure. And here to share some thoughts on those topics and whatever else we can get to, I've asked our all-star panel of Scott Dworkin of the Democratic Coalition, Sarah Burris of Raw Story, and Rich Ojeda, a national spokesperson for No Dems Left Behind. Guys, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, everyone.
Let's start with you, Rich. What's going on in Afghanistan? It's a disgrace to see the hopes and the thoughts and prayers crowd now gleeful over the death of our soldiers in this cowardly attack. I want to get your thoughts first.
I think the far right are absolutely garbage right now. I will tell you that this is a Herculean effort that our troops are actually, you know, doing over there right now. Yesterday morning, I woke up to six photographs of two of my interpreters, their brothers, their parents, and their brothers' wives and kids on a C-17 leaving Afghanistan. Let me tell you something. That right there, it was never supposed to happen. And the mere fact that, you know, right now we are seeing over 100,000 people have been evacuated and we're on path for another 100,000. You know, everybody wants to throw stones, but tell me something. Let's take count. We've did 100,000 people out of Afghanistan. How many daggone people did Donald Trump get out of, you know, the Kurdish areas there? None. He pulled our troops back and allowed Turkey to slaughter these people. You know, what's going on right now started under Donald Trump, and President Biden was able to get an extension to August the 31st. And what we are seeing right now is absolutely a miracle. And look, I'm heartbroken that we've lost 12 Marines today because of ISIS. And make no mistake about it, Joe Biden just gave a speech and he let it be known that make no mistake about it, you're not going to be able to run. You're not going to be able to hide. We're going to find you and we're going to get you. And I'm telling you, we have the capability to do just that.
Yeah, no. And look, and it's what we should have done with Osama bin Laden from the beginning. We should not have gone into Afghanistan the way we did. We should have gone after the target and killed him. That's at least it's what I've been saying from the beginning. And I think it's what we should have done. Scott, let's go to you. What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's been pretty interesting to see them use my playbook and our playbook as against President Biden when it just doesn't make sense to. They're using words like treason and other things. I mean, I know I shouldn't be surprised, but it is beneath even the GOP to do this, because right now they're creating a lot of propaganda for the Taliban, which is going to be used as recruitment material against us. There's going to be a lot of Republicans who sound like they're supporting the Taliban. And I don't know what to say about that. Same thing happens with ISIS, and they don't know how to differentiate the two. They're trying to act like Joe Biden is some kind of Taliban and ISIS sympathizer when he was the one who was stuck in this situation to begin with because of the terrible deal that everybody now has slammed on both sides of the aisle that Donald Trump made. And so it's not about the blame game. Even I knew this when Donald Trump would have, when there were terrorist attacks on foreign soil and Donald Trump was the president, you didn't see me going out and calling him a traitor and saying all these things. You want to be supportive of even him in those kinds of crisis. You don't want to egg on anything else, because it really is a benefit to them, the terrorists, if we're dividing ourselves over these conflicts and we're not united in a front here. So Senator Blackburn and Nikki Haley coming out and acting like Biden should resign over this is absolutely atrocious, disgusting, and beyond, again, what I would ever think is a smart move for any of them, because it will come back to them to haunt them, because they're using our soldiers' dead bodies as political props to use attacks against Biden, and that's just disgraceful.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think it's going to turn around and bite them. But you know, looking at the comments on Twitter and on social media, how almost gleeful they are that they've got this attack point. And Biden, look, to Biden's credit, he stepped forward. He took responsibility. The buck stops with him. I think that's what a president does. Sarah, let's get your thoughts.
Absolutely. I think this is something where, you know, basically all of the predecessors from Bush to Obama to Trump filled the toilet and Biden came in and flushed it. And now it's overflowing. So basically we're stuck in this, you know, sewage mess, trying to figure out how to get out of it. And the fact that we've moved that many people, we have done that much in such a short amount of time is unbelievable to me. And it seems sort of like the biggest cluster, the whole negotiation thing between Trump and the Taliban just seemed absolutely ridiculous. And now that we're sort of looking back on it, and you've got Trump's former acting SecDef, Chris Miller, basically saying, well, like their excuse is, well, we made this deal with the Taliban, but we were never really going to follow it. Like that is their new, that's their defense now. It's just like, well, you know, this wasn't really going to happen anyway. And I'm not really sure that that's the smart way to go here.
I'm with you. So if you weren't going to go through with it, why did you do it? And then release what we now find out are 5,000 Taliban fighters and the guy who's ultimately going to lead the country. Why do you do that?
And also look at Trump. I mean, Trump's actually going and when he's doing his rallies, he's saying, you know, I did this and President Biden was not able to turn it around. I mean, Trump is taking credit for this, you know, conversation and this movement to getting people out of Afghanistan. But of course, they don't want to take any credit when anything goes wrong.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this as you know, when we do get people out and we do, you know, close this chapter, I do see them coming back around and saying that, look what Donald Trump did.
Yeah, there's 600 different members of the Taliban that had to be rearrested, I believe, in January after Biden took office for violating this fake treaty that they had in the first place. It was a PR stunt by Trump where in an election year, he wanted to act like he ended the war without actually ending the war because he didn't want this sort of image. He didn't want the terrorist attacks that happened daily in Afghanistan like this. I'm glad that people are paying attention, but the fake outrage is just, again, disgusting. I don't think that they're like all worried all of a sudden about our troops that have been there because of them and their lies from years ago. But I mean, think about it like this. You drop five different bases under Trump. You have one base then left. You have 5,000 people released that were the Taliban. Some of them are 600 of the worst of them. You have the entire area surrounded by 80,000 Taliban and other terrorists as well. This is all building and culminating to this point. That's why they were rushing out of there, because this is what was going to happen. They knew that this was inevitable. They were lucky to have it, you know, staved off for this long. I'm happy at the moment that we're doing the job that we need to. I mean, obviously it's a terrible day for America. It's a terrible day for our soldiers, but we can't sit there and attack the president for trying to do what he needs to do to get the job done over there. It's just not the day to do it. It's not the day to play politics. And it's, again, the word is disgusting. There's a worse word than that. I can't use it on air though.
No, it's disgraceful.
I don't understand. I want to find out, like, why is it that everybody is already saying that we've abandoned people there? We still have a week left to get everybody out, and they're already saying that Americans are stranded there, that we've left people behind. And I don't know if this is, like, are they trying to, like, start this message ahead of time? Or I don't get it. Where is this coming from, and why? How does that make any sense?
A lot of those Americans are staying by choice. A lot of those Americans are people who work for nonprofits, who are building sewage systems, who are staying behind by choice. So they are working actively to get any American out that they want out. And so the right is trying to paint it as if Americans are being left there when they're choosing to stay there. at this point, you know, they're going to get all Americans who want to leave out of there. They're going to try and get everybody else out. I mean, I'm working around the clock with people. I don't even know what I've done. I've never done evacuations from a war zone before, but I'm getting sent all this information about people who are stuck at the airport or outside the airport from different attorneys across the country. And we're trying to redirect them. And I'll tell you what, the Biden administration has been immediately interactive on it. Same thing with senators on both sides of the aisle. I don't know exactly why they're trying to play this game. The reason why I'm not sitting there writing about this every day in a certain way is because it can get people killed. These tweets can incite other violence. They can be like, oh, look, Blackburn said, she sat there and she said that he needs to resign. If we keep on doing this, she can keep on doing this, and then it'll divide the country. And it's another way to attack us. And we need to recognize when we're being used for propaganda. And they're using themselves so they can prop themselves up as propaganda for ISIS and recruitment manuals. And this is what they want. This is part of the attack.
Yeah, you're right. But you know, I want to go to you, Rich, because you know, you said, you know, fortunately you got a picture of somebody that you've worked with on a plane coming. You know, what do you say to those people who are going, you know what, we've got no responsibility to the folks who helped us there. We should just get Americans out, slam the door on everybody else, and just bail.
That's the worst thing in the world that we could ever do. You know, this is one of the greatest things that America can do, is go over there and stand with the people that stood with us. You know, I can't leave these people in Afghanistan that stood by my side. And I still have one left that is in Afghanistan. And right now, the only thing that I have been saying to him is, when you get on a plane, please send me a pic. We've been working to get him his visa. I've had phone calls with people from New Zealand. You know, we're trying everything in our power to get these folks. I've been writing letters for 11 years. And I will tell you, you know, the last 4 years have probably been the worst. You know, I got an interpreter in Arizona whose wife and child is in Kabul right now, and they're probably not going to get out. But for 4 years, they've been denied a visa. How do you deny somebody their wife and their child that stood by our side in combat? You know, this is absolutely horrible. Donald Trump's 4 years have been a pure train wreck. And you know what? I commend President Biden. It's time. You know, we should have left Afghanistan in May of 2011 after we killed Osama bin Laden. But we stayed, and we stayed because Halliburton, Lockheed Martin, and Brown and Root, and Boeing, those are the reasons why we stayed in Afghanistan. And that's absolute garbage. And these people would love nothing more than to commit us back to those places so we can continue allowing them to make money at the blood, sweat, and tears of our troops.
No, I'm right there with you.
This visa problem. This is like this is a thing that the Trump people actually created. This isn't something that's even normal for the United States, where we had this great process for, you know, getting people through, you know, special immigrant visas. And there are like report after report of people from the Trump administration saying that it was Stephen Miller, who, you know, anti-immigrant Stephen Miller, who was just like, no, like, we're not letting anybody in from another country because he doesn't support anybody who's not white,
racist.
And so this idea of like, we're going to save you know, these amazing feminist women from Afghanistan, or these incredible you know, people who helped our military, who served in our military as allies, like, he didn't care. And he was actively working to try and stop those. And so of course the last 4 years have been a complete, you know, crapshoot trying to get people here, because they constantly have been trying to stop it. And so this idea of Trump, you know, saying, oh, we're going to withdraw, what was it, like his Hail Mary right before the election last year, where he was just like, I'm going to have everybody withdrawn by Christmas. That didn't include any of those Afghanis.
Right.
Didn't include any of the interpreters. None of those people were out there. He's just talking about the soldiers. And now we're finding out that, oh, you know, that wasn't really going to happen.
Yeah.
So last bit on this that I want to get to, because, you know, some of the stuff that I've heard is, you know, Joe Biden lost the war. We've now lost. And I don't see this as a loss. I think, as you pointed out, Rich, when Osama bin Laden got killed, that was our objective. That was the mission. That, to me, that was bring the troops home, have the parades, kiss the babies, do all that stuff, because we won. Is that not reality?
That's the way it should have been. You know, I'll tell you right now, we never lost a battle. I mean, at the end of the day, they never won one single fight that we got into with them over there. So, you know, when Star is screaming, you know, Biden lost anything, there's never a good time to end an unwinnable war. We could stay for another 5 years, spend another $1 trillion, lose another 2,000 troops, and send another million people home, missing arms, legs, and struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder. We could do that. Is that what the Republicans want? I can guarantee you that's what Lockheed Martin and them want, because they don't care, because they look at us as nothing more than dollar signs. I think President Biden did the right thing. He has the courage to do the right thing. And you know what? He's taking it. He's saying the buck stops with him. And that's what a real leader does.
Absolutely. Scott, you want to jump in?
Yeah, they want to. They want President Biden to lie, paint a rosy picture, act like it's this movie that they're playing in their head, that we're just going to swoop in and we're indestructible and nobody can touch us. And it's not 3,500 troops versus 80,000 members of the Taliban surrounding them, and apparently ISIS as well. So it's a little bit out of reach. I don't understand exactly what their strategy is, because right now, again, the Republican Party is aligned with ISIS and the Taliban against the United States of America. Because not supporting Biden in this moment does not support our troops over there. It doesn't help anyone. And this is just contributing to another attack on our soil, which is from the Republican Party itself. And that's just devastating to us.
Yeah. And I got to wonder, and Sarah, maybe you'll throw a thought in on this. I got to wonder how many people know there's a difference between ISIS and the Taliban.
Probably very few. I would hope that people would understand the difference between, at the very least, like Al-Qaeda, Taliban, ISIS. But I saw last week, I think it was, that Eric Trump said that the Taliban was the one who bombed us on 9/11. So there's really not.
You've got to be a special kind of stupid to say that.
He is.
Yeah.
You've got to work to be that dumb. Like, you can't watch any TV. There are a lot of people out there who really don't understand this and don't. You know, can't conceive of what this war has been like for the last 20 years. And I would say, too, one of the things that Biden actually talked about in his book is that when he would go to Afghanistan and talk to soldiers and commanders, everybody had a different answer when he asked what the mission was. And then after bin Laden was gone, it just really seemed like this total cluster of what are we doing?
Right.
And so I, you know, you see people like Donald Trump and all of these conservatives saying, you know, we should have been out of this forever ago. It's like, well, but you had 4 years. Where were you? You know, exactly. if you think that we should have been out, then why didn't you pull us out 4 years ago?
I'm right there with you.
But yeah.
No, it is what it is. Guys, I'm going to take a quick break right here. Back on the other side. But before I go, I got to tell you, you know, watching President Biden talk about the soldiers who lost their lives, there was compassion there. There was empathy there. There was understanding that, sadly, the former guy, I don't think, could have ever understood. And in this moment, having Joe Biden as our president, I think was an important day. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
On The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1902. That was the day more than 100 trade union delegates representing thousands of working people in St. Paul, Minnesota, elected Charles James to be the president of the city's Trades and Labor Assembly. Virtually forgotten by history, James is considered to be the first African American elected to a city labor council anywhere in America. He was born in 1866 in St. Paul and began working as a leather cutter for local shoe manufacturers at age 15. This was at a time when most African Americans were excluded from skilled trades. His biographer Dave Riley asserts that it is unclear when James became involved in union politics and organizing. Shoemaking was the largest mass production industry in St. Paul, employing thousands. Riley notes that the Knights of Labor had been active in the city during the 1880s, and shoe workers were among the first to organize. By 1899, James had become the first president of a newly formed shoe workers union in Minneapolis, and helped to found three more locals in St. Paul. By 1902, James was well known and well respected throughout the Twin Cities as a strong union leader. He served three terms as president of the Trades Assembly and then as secretary for seven more years. Riley states that James continued as a full-time organizer and district business agent, traveling to cities across the Midwest to organize shoe workers. When he died in 1923, the Boot and Shoe Workers Union eulogized him in their national journal. Though James had been obscured from local labor history for decades, Riley and others have worked to write Charles James back into the history books.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So interesting, interesting little factoid. It appears Iceland is 90% vaccinated. 90% of the citizens there feel it is their civic duty to go get vaccinated. And they have yet to have a single person die from COVID since back in May. Someone doing the right thing. I look here at home, not so much, especially as you look at Florida, you look at Missouri, you look at Texas, South Dakota. A lot of these places where you've got these death cult governors, we've got trouble on the horizon here to share some thoughts on what we do with the vaccine, what we do with mandating. Is it something the federal government should do? Is this something the employers are going to be able to do? I've asked our all-star panel to stick around. Rich Ojeda, national spokesperson for No Dems Left Behind, Sarah Burris, reporter over at Raw Story, and Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition. Guys, thanks for sticking around. So let's start with you, Sarah. Is this something that the federal government should be mandating? Should we be holding people down and jabbing them with a needle because there are some people who are just stupid? Should we be doing that?
As tempting as that is for a pay-per-view channel, I'm not a huge fan of government mandates. I do think, however, if this is like every other vaccine, right? If you don't get whooping cough vaccines, then you can't go to school, or your ability to work in certain companies is limited. I would rather see this coming from the rest of the country leading on this rather than the government thing, because I think that's really just going to end up hammering a lot of people that are already freaked out about this. So I think what's funny to me is this whole corporate and business mandate idea is really freaking out Republicans, because they can't hate corporations because their whole thing is about, you know, corporations. And so now they're just like, well, I hate mandates, but I have to love these corporations. And so they're kind of in a, watching them sort of have that internal struggle has been fun to see. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of the mind where I'm just going to hide out in my apartment again for the rest of the next few months and then hope it passes.
Is that where we have to go back to, is sheltering in place and holding ourselves away from them? Scott, let me go to you. I mean, you know, I keep having people tell me that it's about freedom. It's about my freedom. How dare you have the audacity to tell me I got to put a cloth over my beautiful smile. I spent money to get these teeth.
My freedom, our freedom matters as well. And you're infringing on our right to live freely. So that is infringing on our rights to live healthy and free. Yes, the vaccine should be mandated from every angle. Anybody who does not get vaccinated should be banned from life from every angle. And that my idea is that the government does institute vaccine mandates, because then it gives cover really for those companies to then give vaccine mandates. And it's really the only way to do it. You know, yeah, there's going to be some nurses that quit or some hospital staff that quit, but they're already instituting a get vaccinated or you're fired policy across different hospital institutions across country. They're going to do the same at a lot of corporations. And, you know, I think when the lawsuits start piling up as they are now of people who have lost their family due to COVID, You know, they're not going to want to be the school district that didn't mandate masks or didn't mandate vaccines for that teacher to get it. So that's why even a lot of labor unions outside of police unions have been really supportive of it as well, because they just don't want their workforce to die. And that's what's going to happen, is if you're not mandating vaccines, people who haven't gotten it yet will not get it. And that's what we're faced with right now, is the reality. And I've talked to a lot of people who aren't anti-vaccine. They are just along the lines of like, well, I never got the flu vaccine and I'm not going to get this one because I just don't like vaccines. And so they haven't got, I don't know if they're scared of the needle or what it is, but they're not more scared of COVID than they are of the vaccine, which is just backwards completely. So I think that we have a hill to climb here. And the only way to help on that is to mandate it with everybody. And as Richard probably knows, like I'm pretty sure that they're going to, the mandate is going through with the military.
Yeah.
I know active duty, but I think it's spreading throughout the entire military, and then the U.S. government will institute it as well. You're just not going to be able to go to places, because again, it's going to come down to that liability, and the football stadium's not going to want to get sued because you can prove that you got COVID from that game. They're not going to want to be like that. And the same thing, they're not going to have a lot of these testing opt-outs as well. People aren't going to be able to opt out and be like, oh, I, instead of vaccine, I'll get tested every week, because people don't want to have to do that test every week. People don't want to have to, and things change. It can be you went out one night instead, and then you come to school, and then all of a sudden you make the entire school sick. You can look at, even in small places, Wake County opened up schools in North Carolina this week, and on Monday and Tuesday, they've already had hundreds of COVID cases with children. So there is a direct correlation between no mask mandate and kids getting sick and people getting sick. This is very basic science.
Yep.
So if people don't believe it by now, then they need to be mandated to get it. And if they don't want to get it, then they should not be a part of public discourse or public life. And that's their choice.
Now, Rich, you know, you're somebody who went and fought for our freedom. We're told that, you know, our soldiers go and they fight for our freedoms, and we're about freedom. Is it really something? Is it really freedom that I should, you know, be able to infect other people? Should I be able to freely do that and not protect myself or anybody else? Is that true freedom in your definition of what you fought for?
Okay, we fight for democracy in the military, but we don't practice it. Get your butt in line, roll your sleeves up, stick one cheek out, walk down the row, and you get hit with about 20 different shots, because that's how it is. But here's the thing. We tried to give everybody the ability to do the right thing, and they won't. They refuse. We're in our fourth surge, and there'll be a fifth, and there'll be a sixth, as long as we keep letting these jackaloons not get vaccinated and run around and do what they're doing. I mean, we're watching people eat daggone medicine that's anti-parasitic medicine for cows and horses. These people are just not that. They're sharp as a marble. That's where they at. And honestly, you know, my thing is that it's never going to end until we do the right thing. You're either going to die off, and at the end of the day right now, I'm at the point where I'm like, go for it. You know, I'm angered that you got children that are, we're being told that if a child gets COVID, the only way that child gets a ventilator is if another child dies. The moment that we stopped protecting the children is the moment that we went wrong. Now it's absolutely important. If you don't want to get vaccinated, I don't care what they have to do. We're not going to end. This is not going to stop. And let me tell you something. It mutated into Delta. Delta is COVID on steroids. If this mutates again and it's something else, it could be Delta on steroids. And that may just have people dropping in the streets almost immediately. We've got to get past this.
Right. But you, since you talk about the children, I mean, I've had people who tell me that this is just like anything else. When I was a kid, mom took me over to get chicken pox and mumps and measles. And there's this thought process in some, to use your eloquent word, jackaloons. There are some of these morons out there who think this is the same thing. And we can just go get all the kids sick and we'll all have immunity from it because we'll all have gotten through it.
Well, the problem with that is that children are absolutely getting COVID now at an alarming rate. We have kids in all these hospitals. The children's wards are filled up and kids are dying. And I saw somebody do some math, and it was basically in a statement that said, if this percentage dies, it's this many. It was 1,200.
Right.
1,200. When you stop protecting the children and the children start dying, let me tell you something. The people won't forget that. I believe that we've watched Abbott and we've watched DeSantis destroy their political careers, and that's a good thing. And it's because they refuse to protect these kids. And how dare any parent, especially being as stupid as, I just want to see everybody to look at my baby's face. You must be out your mind. I mean, you want people to see your child's face? How's it going to look when it's embalmed? Because that's the path we're going. Do the right thing, protect these kids. Yeah. And I'm telling you, I'm kind of like Scott. There comes a time when we need to draw a line. And if you don't get vaccinated, I don't care. Don't even let them have groceries. I don't care.
So are anybody in favor of holding them down and jabbing them, or is this just we ostracize?
No.
I do think we should ostracize. I think.
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm not in favor of grabbing people and holding them down, but I've met a couple of people who go, nope, too important. We should have the ability to do it. This is where we should go. But to Rich, your point, I'm looking at a report that came out of Florida that said these kids have been back to school a short period of time, and they've already got 12,000 students who have tested positive in the 15 largest districts. This is just 15 districts in Florida. They've got over 2,600 employees who have tested positive, and they've got another 30,000 people who are quarantining because of it, because this is contagious. This is bad.
12,000 kids in Tennessee are now quarantined right now. This is horrible. And the thing about it is we've already seen the photographs, the videos of children that are on ventilators, and it's breathtaking. It's brutal. It's, you feel for these children. And, I'm sorry, but I'd do anything for my child. I would cut the heart out of my chest for my child. And to sit here and watch parents fighting so that their kids can have access to the virus, I mean, you're sitting here and you're screaming, you're threatening doctors and nurses that are showing up at Board of Education meetings to explain to people, look, we want to protect these children. Children are already a petri dish. I mean, in grade school, all they do is wipe their nose on each other and they'll trade masks and stuff like that. I mean, that's how it is. It's already dangerous for kids. And now we're talking about a deadly virus, and it is going to kill kids. It's going to kill kids.
And we haven't seen the worst of it yet. Now, you brought up a minute ago about, some of these alternative kind of treatments. And what's interesting to me is we have what is now FDA approved. The Pfizer vaccine has been approved. I don't know of one person who's died from the vaccine. Yet there are people who are still advocating that you drink bleach and shove a light up your behind, take what was the hydrochloroquine, that was for a while, and then it was some silver stuff, and now they're calling people who got the vaccine sheep, while advocating for taking a drug that was made for sheep. We're now saying take this medicine to deworm, sheep and cow and all this stuff. I'm confused at how our education system has failed so many people.
Yeah, but Rick, it's okay. Okay. Let him go down that path. Let him go down that path. He who eats the most marbles doesn't grow up and have kids of his own. We're watching Darwinism. It's going to happen. So
this is like, they're sterile. Maybe they're sterilizing themselves after this. There was a story today where somebody posted on one of those Ivermectin Facebook groups, and they said that I'm on my first dose of it, and I went to the grocery store and I literally crapped my pants. Is this normal? And they were like, yeah, no, this is totally normal. We're really crapping our pants under this right now. And the thing is like there are studies. I did a whole research about this. There are studies that say that this drug works if in the petri dish. It will fight it if you put it in the petri dish. I am not a petri dish. I am a human. And so if you put that in me, it is toxic. So it might be fine for the porcelain, toxic for the sera. So that is the thing that people don't seem to understand, is they don't get sort of the division between this works in the lab, but it doesn't work in the human. And the idea that they're going to it with people are like, the tractor supplies in Oklahoma City are sold out of this stuff.
That's crazy.
You don't trust doctors, but you're going to trust Carl. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to trust this guy. on the internet, or like, you know, your horse is yours.
That's crazy.
Mr. Ed is giving you medical advice.
On a YouTube video, you can't tell me differently.
Yeah, I'm watching YouTube with my mouth open on the toilet, so it's got to work. But let me ask you, last question, because you got Ron DeSantis now, Death Santis, throwing people off of unemployment, while conservatives are saying, well, if employers are going to force their employees to get vaccinated, we should get them unemployment. Isn't it counterproductive to be throwing people off of unemployment while advocating for those people to get unemployment? It seems kind of weird to me.
I think he's destroyed his political career. I hope that he has. With all the things that he has done, this definitely should destroy his political career. If it doesn't, it just shows how bad we really are in this country.
Voters are going to be dead.
No, you're right. But when you're talking about, you know, this unemployment insurance, I mean, what they don't understand is that, you know, most of these Republican governors have come out and said, we're ending the unemployment insurance. That money was spent on the economy. These people that draw unemployment insurance don't have offshore accounts and hedge funds. They spend it locally in the economy. That was benefiting the economy. And they shot that in the foot too. I mean, you know, when people tell me, you know, it looks like we may lose the House, we may lose the Senate, I'm sitting here thinking, how? They're killing off their base is what they're doing. And what the ones that are being left alive are being screwed royally. So really, surely we should be able to hold on to the House and Senate.
I hope so, but you know, you're not killing enough fast enough with this, because we're actually taking care of them. So there's my view, and there are some places that I think it was Idaho who's saying that they may be getting to a point where they're going to deny people access to the healthcare facilities because they're running out of spaces. Scott, last bit on this. Should we be denying people who don't get vaccinated? Should we deny them healthcare?
It'll never happen just because of the doctors and nurses that I know are never going to deny people from that if they had anything to do with it. And that's one of the great things about their heroism. So it's I know it's not the same response you would expect. There is that part of humanity where it's not like 90% of the people getting unemployment insurance are Democrats. It doesn't split that way. It's average Americans of every party affiliation across the board. These are things that are going to be stains on their reputation for the rest of their lives. And yeah, there might be Democrats running around right now saying we're going to lose the House and the Senate, and there will be Republicans saying we're going to beat them and we're going to get the House and the Senate. I don't see that as a real possibility at this moment, for a lot of different reasons. They just don't. We have Marjorie Taylor Greene, and they have what, Speaker Pelosi? She doesn't scare people anymore. She is a proven leader, and that's proven in the polls. So I'll leave you on this. There is a pregnant nurse in Alabama who died with her unborn child from COVID, and so everyone is susceptible to this. And if you're not going to get vaccinated, then there's something wrong with you.
Rick, can I have 2 seconds?
Go.
Okay, look, there's doctors out there that are not making the money that they normally make. If you are a brain surgeon, if you are a surgeon that does people's spines, they're not doing surgeries anymore. Hospitals are stopping because it's completely COVID. These doctors are not making any money watching COVID patients. So there's a group of people that are getting really irate that they're not making money because people refuse to do the right thing. And I agree. I say shut them down. I say tell them go someplace else. Go out in the parking lot because there's an intent, and that's where the nurses that don't want to get vaccinated, they'll take care of you.
Well, in Mississippi, they've turned a parking garage into a hospital, field hospital, because there aren't enough beds. And at some point, you may get to a point of scarcity where there's not enough beds, there's not enough resources, there are not enough of those hero nurses and doctors to take care of these folks. And it may come to this. And I'm, for one, if you didn't get vaccinated, sorry. You're on the losing end of this. That's my view. Gonna take a quick break. On the other side, we're gonna talk a little bit about the infrastructure bill, a little bit about voting rights. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1819. That was the day that Alan Pinkerton was born in Glasgow, Scotland. His father was a policeman who died while Alan was a boy. This left the family in poverty. As a young man, he became involved in the Chartism movement. This reform movement hoped to expand the political rights of the working class in Great Britain. Alan had to flee his homeland to avoid arrest because of his involvement. This led him to Chicago. It is a great historic irony that Alan Pinkerton came to the United States because of his involvement in a working class cause. Today, Pinkertons are often considered some of the greatest armed foes against unionism in U.S. labor history. In Chicago, Pinkerton became involved in law enforcement and then formed his own detective agency. The Pinkerton National Detective Agency made its name working against railway thefts, but it became most notorious for opposing the labor movement. Pinkerton's spies infiltrated labor meetings for company owners, worked as hired guns to stop union organizing, and protected strike breakers. Alan Pinkerton died in 1884 and passed the agency on to his sons. During the 1890s, there were more Pinkertons and reserves than the standing army of the United States. One of the most famous battles between Pinkertons and workers occurred at the 1892 strike against Carnegie Steel in Homestead, Pennsylvania. There, 7 workers and 2 Pinkertons were killed. The event inspired a song by William W. Delaney. The lyrics included the lines, quote, "God help them tonight in their hour of affliction, praying for him who they'll ne'er see again. Here the poor orphans tell their sad story. Father was killed by a Pinkerton man." For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this is interesting. Evidently, 7 Capitol police officers have filed a lawsuit against the former guy. They're citing the 1871 Ku Klux Klan Act, which in part evidently prohibits conspiracies to overthrow the government. They're naming the former guy, his lawyers, and I'm guessing a whole bunch of other folks in this. And maybe this is how we get public accountability. And I know there are hearings that are going to happen. I know there, you know, Adam Schiff and them are going to have more. But maybe this is how we get more public accountability. At least I hope so. And maybe we get some of these officers who were harmed in this. Maybe they get a piece of Trump Towers and all of the Trump properties. And maybe Donald Trump's on the street corner with a tin can at some point. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on this and how we rebuild the nation, I've got our all-star panel, Sarah Burris, reporter at Raw Story, Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition, and Rich Ojeda, national spokesperson for No Dems Left Behind. Guys, thanks for sticking around.
Morning.
So let's start with you, Scott. Thoughts? Lawsuit going to sue the former guy? These 7 cops going, hey, you're responsible.
I wouldn't be shocked if most law enforcement officers that were there that day don't sue Donald Trump. In this lawsuit, also Roger Stone and the Proud Boys are being sued and other far right groups that were involved in the planning and the funding of it. Obviously, now the Select Committee has phone records, as the FBI does, of members of Congress, and they're getting more from the White House personnel and the First Family from the Trump family and elsewhere from the RNC, that they think that there was coordination between these terrorist groups, which is obvious because we saw a lot of it on camera. And you have obviously the biggest dereliction of duty that we've probably ever seen of a president of the United States who sat by and watched the Capitol burn while he's sitting in a tent and also at the White House and having Pence take over basically as president to call in the troops. So I think with this lawsuit, this is one of many that you're going to see like this. And they're going to be devastating because they're going to be able to uncover so much stuff, so many other crimes. And I think that they are going to win a substantial sum of money. Now, whether or not Trump will have any money to give them, that's a different story. But this is going to keep them in court. for years to come, and they should. I hope that they're bankrupt, and I hope that they can't stand on the street corner, because I hope that they're in prison by that point.
Yeah, this is where I've got some hope. You know, the hearings aside in Congress, when you start talking about the money, when capitalism starts working like this, people usually dig in and get to the bottom. There's part of me that hopes this is where we get to. We bankrupt every last one of them, and these folks are made whole. But we end up getting the who was behind the money, who was behind this.
Yeah, and I think if anybody deserves to have a free condo in Trump Tower, it's these officers who went through this crap. Because at the very least, they're getting something out of it other than a kick in the head.
Yep, a condo for you, a condo for you, absolutely. Get Oprah out there to give all condos away.
This will be a fun legal exercise, I feel like, because I've never seen a lawsuit like this in my lifetime, so I'm kind of curious to see how this will work. But Scott's right, the discovery on this is going to be epic. And if I were Trump and those guys, then I would be trying to settle everything off the books. But I don't think that's ever going to happen. I don't think these guys are going to be like, oh yeah, we'll settle. I think they're just like, mm-mm. And the Justice Department has already made kind of a declaration saying that this was not an official event in terms of Mo Brooks, because Mo Brooks said that he should be defended by the Justice Department. The Justice Department's like, no, this was a political event. This wasn't official.
Yep.
So already you have the Justice Department saying for anybody at that event, including Donald Trump, that this was not an official event. This is not in your capacity as an elected official. So I don't know how he's going to be able to get squirm away with this.
Yeah. Rich, your thought?
I think the January 6th commission is important to be able to, I think, educate a lot of folks across this country. And I think that if it's done properly, it's going to wake a lot of people up. It's going to make a lot of people go, wow, I didn't realize, I didn't know that. And that's what I'm hoping. And then for the rest, there's nothing we can do. You can either show these people the facts, and they're going to accept the facts and realize that Donald Trump, was a crook. Donald Trump set this up. He lost and he didn't have the courage to accept defeat. So they went ahead and followed through with their plan that was 2 years old when they spoke in 2018 and said, if we lose, we're just going to say it was a fraud and it was stolen from us. And that's exactly what they did. So I'm just hoping that we do that. And then I hope that everybody that participated in this, I want to see them go down. I want to see them penniless. And I'm talking about even the knuckleheads that were, swinging hockey sticks, those people, I want them to go down. I want their lives to be ruined. And I want them to spend a lot of time in prison having to learn how to fight naked in the shower.
Yeah, sadly, that's not happening. I mean, the first sentences have really, in my view, have been just slaps on the wrist. I want major time. I want people who tried to overthrow our election and undo hundreds of years of peaceful transfers of power. I want them to suffer and pay. And so far, it hasn't happened.
But the people that they've so far done really haven't been the ones that were in there busting police officers, spraying them with bear mace. Those folks right there, I believe, are going to go. Remember, the guy that broke into Nancy Pelosi's desk, put his feet on her desk, that's 7 years. So I believe that when they hit the ones that with the hockey sticks and that were punching and shooting bear mace into the police's face, those guys are going to go down.
I hope so.
Justice is really drawing a line between these guys, the people who were just like sort of caught up in the moment and, brought their Trump flags and started beating people with it versus the people who plotted this, planned this, conspired with other people. Brought lots of body armor and weapons and all of those things. They're drawing a good line between those people. And I get that, we do want to punish the hockey stick guys. But even the hockey stick guys, like if you bring a hockey stick, why'd you bring a hockey stick? Right? Like that's a different category of people than some guy who just showed up with a flagpole.
Yep.
Still, well, unless you use that flagpole to beat officers, obviously, but yeah. A lot of them, there are a few that are facing the rest of their lives in prison. There are a lot of people who are facing 20 plus years in prison. And keep in mind that they will be made examples of, not only now, but it will probably trickle in. The most major cases will really start next year during an election year, where there will be a reminder of how serious this was and all the court cases that are going on. There will be all the lawsuits that'll be, they can only delay so long and use COVID to delay for so long. But next year is really going to be a terrible year for the GOP when it comes to these court cases, because it will be a reminder to everybody how real it was. And if we don't do something about it, this, I'm shocked that it hasn't really been localized. We saw it in Michigan, obviously, and some other states. But, you know, we're going to see this again at the state level. We're already seeing it with COVID facilities where they're having mini little, you know, where they rush the place. And obviously most of them don't know why they're there, because they're obviously paid to do that. It's an interesting scheme, but this is a playbook that they intend to use. And you can't, the democracy cannot run when half of the people say that it was a fraudulent election unless they won. That is a dictatorship. That is not what we live under here. And even just the lie, just telling a lie, should be something that is punishable to elected officials, where it bans them from running for public office ever again. These lies are killing people, and they're going to continue to kill people until they stop.
Real quick, Rich.
Some of these folks that have been released on bail, they're already saying that, you know, they were released on bail, but they've already started cutting their own throats. They go home and they're right back on those, you know, their Nazi web pages and stuff like that. And that's going to come back on them when they finally go to court.
I sure hope so. Now, I want to change gears here real quick, because you brought up Nancy Pelosi a little bit ago. And I got to tell you, I've not always been the biggest Nancy Pelosi fan, but this week, I think she did something pretty impressive, getting the John Lewis Voting Rights Act moved forward, and the $3.5 trillion budget plan, the infrastructure, the human infrastructure plan, had all Democrats on the same page. I give her props for that. Scott, let me start with you. It's a big deal, I think, right?
Yeah, I told you. Like, this is not the person to be trifled with. It is Speaker Pelosi. I've had the honor of being able to work with her for a very long time, and her staff, and it's just it's more maneuvering that really is helping to save us. Now, I'm not sure what the 9 moderates really had at that time. I think that they're just seeking re-election, and they had to make a stink. So that's what they did, and it's just part of the game or whatever they're doing, because I'm not sure if they actually got anything out of it. They just wanted to kind of stop things and act like they were important for a moment. But, you know, when it comes down to it, you can see that there's true leadership. It's not about it's not about like, oh, the left side or right side. She really wants to help as many Americans as possible. And I think she's been doing that since she took over the speaker role. This time, and really has proven to be a champion and a patriot. And I'm very thankful for her leadership, because without her, we wouldn't have gotten President Biden. We wouldn't have won the Senate. We wouldn't have won the House again without Speaker Pelosi.
You want to jump in, Sarah?
Yeah. So one of the stories that I wrote this week that I'm bothered didn't get more attention, so I'm going to have to tweet it out a couple more times. But there, what we found out this week is that the No Labels campaign, bless their hearts, the No Labels guys, which are largely headed by a bunch of hedge funders and, bankster kind of guys. They oppose most of the infrastructure stuff because it involves taxes on them. So No Labels basically told some of the Gang of Nine, the
unmovable.
The unmovable. There was a good name for them. The sabotage squad. That's what it was. The sabotage squad of nine. There was this claim that that they were behind, that No Labels was behind all of this and pushing them to oppose Pelosi. And there were two members, one in I think Illinois and one in Texas, where they said, who were supposed to be at the fundraiser that Pelosi was having for the DCCC in Napa over the weekend. And they said that they would raise $200,000 for them if they crapped out on the fundraiser. And so this is just like the weirdest kind of political idea of like, okay, we're going to make this deal that says that the bill has to be passed by the 27th, even though it's not going to go forward until the fiscal year. And a lot of this just doesn't really make any sense from the no labels perspective, but I guess they're the ones who are sort of behind this sabotage.
Right. Squad. My perspective is they want to get the hard infrastructure, the 1.2 pushed through, and then they're going to peter out on the other.
And then
one.
They want to crap out on the other.
Absolutely.
One.
That's the plan. At least that's my view on it.
And maybe, you know, if that's what they decide to try, I just don't know how that's going to help them at the midterm. You know, like that just doesn't seem like a good strategy for me to be like, yes, I like roads and bridges, but I hate nurses. You know, that just doesn't make any sense to me. And yeah. At a time when, I mean, we were just talking about the COVID thing, I found out this week that hospitals in Florida are down to, they have 48 hours of oxygen left.
And they're actually taking the liquefied oxygen from the water treatment plants and using that in the hospitals in Orlando.
Which just blows my mind because, like, in Tampa, now they're on a water restriction order because they can't clean the water because the hospitals need the oxygen. This is a much larger idea of infrastructure than just roads and bridges, water treatment. This also does involve hospitals and all of these other things. And so Biden, it makes so much sense to link all of these things together. And I don't understand why all of these conservative fools have decided that, you know, they're going to oppose one and support the other.
I'm right there. Rich, you want to jump in on your final thought?
Well, I mean, my thoughts are is, you know, a $3.5 trillion bill just passed the House. I see the Senate going to do a few things. I can see them putting up a fight, and I'm sure, you know, Manchin will be a part of it too. They're going to try to make sure that the rich don't pay for everything because that's not what they want. You know, I think everything else, you know, as long as the rich aren't paying for it, I mean, I guess it could go through. I'm sure there'll be some people trying to throw stones because we know that in 2022 and 2024, the Republicans only have one play, and that is the Democrats didn't get nothing done. So anything that goes through that's infrastructure is, to me, going to get, credited. Yeah. For the Democrats.
No, absolutely. And this idea that we can't afford it is absolute bunk because the folks over at Americans for Tax Fairness, they came out with their billionaire information that from the beginning of the pandemic to August 17th, our 700 billionaires saw their wealth go up by 62%. Elon Musk himself, his wealth went up by 600%. They said just during that pandemic period, Our heavy hitters, those 700, saw their wealth go up $1.7 trillion. I say we tax all of that. We use it for infrastructure to help people get education, to get health care, to get an education, to get granny some new chompers and hearing aids. There's a lot of stuff we should be doing.
Let's just eat one of them.
There you go. Scott, you want to say something real quick?
Nope. No.
Eat one of them.
I think we've got a great got a great bill to pass, and we've got some jackaloons in the Senate that we have to deal with in order to get money in the pockets of people so that we can have new jobs and infrastructure actually built. And we'll have to explain that infrastructure is not just roads and bridges, that it is expanded from there because we don't just live off of roads and bridges anymore.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Guys, I appreciate the time. Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition, Sarah Burris, reporter at Raw Story, and of course, our good friend, Rich Ojeda, national spokesperson for No Dems Left Behind. Guys, thanks so much. I look forward to talking to you guys again next time.
Get vaccinated.
There you go. Get vaccinated. Here's the reality, though. And back to this Americans for Tax Fairness bill. This 62%, they saw their wealth go up. So if someone tells you, hey, Rick, we can't afford it. We're broke. We don't have any money. I know where there's $1.8 trillion that we can get access to, and I know where there's a couple other trillion dollars that we can get access to. Maybe we go back to the good tax code of the good socialist president, Dwight David Eisenhower, start taxing these people at 92%, or even back to the tax code of the sainted Ronald Reagan when he took office, when it was 70%. Just a thought. Love to hear yours, though. Is there something you'd like to hear our panel talk about? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, thericksmithshow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go, wherever you go. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.